This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What's up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre. Straight Fire for Monday, August 23rd. Coming off a fun, kind of tiring weekend. Your boy was in Vegas. You guys know I enter the gambling contest in Vegas. So you got to go out there to sign up. You can't do it over the internet. And you got to get a proxy to enter. So I went and saw my guy. And of course, we made it like a little fox gathering, as you guys saw on the Instagram post, obviously. It was fun. Vegas, a little warm. I will just say, I did not know you had to wear a mask everywhere all the time, indoors, that is, which made it a little kind of annoying. But hey, I get it. You know, the stuff is not fun. The pool scene was good. I didn't stay on the strip. I didn't do too much partying. But, you know, listen, it was a business trip. A lot of gambling. Made a bunch of futures wagers. I posted one on the Instagram stories about Baker Mayfield winning MVP. I know he's a long shot. I get it. That's fine. I'm just telling you guys, and we'll get into it throughout the week with the guests, starting with Kevin Clark today from The Ringer. You guys are going to love Kevin Clark. Smart guy. I've known him for, I don't know, probably 10 years. And I will say this before I get back to the Baker Mayfield. When I announced the soccer team purchase of Necaxa, who, by the way, won on Sunday, thrilling game against an awful opponent that they should have buried, and they had so many opportunities. They only won 1-0, but incredible start. They won 3 straight. They are currently, I think, like 7th or 8th in the league. One of the first texts I got when I posted it was from Kevin Clark. He's just a good dude. And you know, it's easy to drop a DM or a tweet to somebody. Hey, congrats, awesome. When you get the text, it's a little more personal. Clark, good guy. I've known him for a while. You guys are going to love it. Okay, quickly, back to Baker Mayfield. Everybody says, oh, it's got Pat Mahomes, MVP, or Aaron Rodgers. First of all, Aaron Rodgers is not winning another. They're not giving him back-to-back MVPs. Not happening. It's a situation with the Cleveland Browns schedule. Baker Mayfield in year two under Stefanski. Healthy running backs. Incredible offensive line. Healthy Odell Beckham. A defense that should be very good. And I just think Baker has a very good year. I don't think he's going to do 5,000 yards, 45 touchdowns, nothing like that. He doesn't have to. But if they win 11 or 12 games, as I believe they will, Baker will 1,000% be in the MVP discussion. If you remember, Josh Allen was in the MVP discussion last year significantly. Okay? It ended up going to Aaron Rodgers. He had the best year of his career. Packers were the number one seed. You basically got to be one of the top seeds. And I am a believer in the Browns. And I'm not just buying the hype. I know the history. We'll get into it with Clark and other guests. But things look good for Baker Mayfield. So that's just what I did. Make some college futures bets. And again, you guys know how the futures market works for the gamblers out there. I'm not making $500 future bets and tying up that kind of money long term. I'm just not for 4 or 5 months. I'm just not doing that. It's not cost effective in, for at least me. Maybe for high rollers listening to this podcast, guys worth, you know, $5, $6, $7 million. Hey, you do whatever you want with your money. I'm not making a $500 futures bet on Baker Mayfield. I will put a few shekels on a couple teams to win the Super Bowl, MVP, Heisman. I made 2 week one bets. I'm not going to reveal just yet. I'm so geeked for the NFL, guys. I think you have no idea. You'll be able to tell from this conversation. Here it is, me and Kevin Clark from The Ringer.
You know a guy. Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guy who, you know him, Wall Street Journal, The Ringer. He's pretty famous, you know, he covers the NFL. I mean, I expect to see him on some late night talk shows. Kevin Clark, the jet setter, left LA, the only person I know who left Los Angeles in the last year for New York, where it's, I think, 6 months out of the year freezing. Kevin, are you cold yet in New York?
No, there's a tropical storm hitting today.
Oh, right. Okay.
So yeah. No, it's 80 degrees. There's just almost a hurricane happening. So it's fine.
Wow. And while you're doing that, you're following the NFL, obviously. Kevin, one of the preeminent NFL voices, I would say, right? Would you agree with that statement?
Would I agree that I'm one of the preeminent NFL voices?
Yeah.
I would agree that I'm an NFL voice. I'm one of many. I'm mixed in with the potpourri of NFL writers. We're all one big
potpourri.
Pot.
Wow, one big that is pot. The first ever mention of the word potpourri on this podcast. Well done, Kevin. Way to bring up the discourse a little bit. All right, let's start with. Let's just jump right into it. You wrote about Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor. Yeah. I bet that, probably foolishly, that Joe Judge would be the first coach fired. You know, the Giants don't usually do that kind of thing, but I'm just a Jets fan and hoping for their demise. Zach Taylor's in some trouble, no?
He better figure this thing out quickly, because I'm in agreement with you, because I think what happens now, you know this more than anybody. You were around for the Gase era, and I'm not comparing the two. All I'm saying is when you start screwing around with young quarterbacks, the heat comes quick. And for Burrow, so I spent some time with Burrow. I spent some time with the offensive coordinator, Brian Callahan, who I liked. And I thought that, and Taylor as well. And I think there's an honesty there that I actually was surprised by and found refreshing. Like, those guys were basically like, yeah, the opening of camp sucked. And Burrow, who's as blunt as anybody I've ever met at the quarterback position, was saying, okay, you know what? It wasn't necessarily ghost pains or anything like that, but it was a mental block for him in the sense early in camp that his superpower is his vision, right? Like, he can diagnose plays. We saw it at LSU, and he didn't have that for the first 2 weeks of camp, 10 days of camp, whatever it is. He said, I just saw a wall of people. Probably what you and I see if we try to play quarterback, right? Where he didn't know who was who in the pocket. And I think that's really fascinating. And he said it's come along over the past couple of weeks, or past couple of days rather, and that it's getting better. But I was surprised at the level of bluntness and honesty about the need to get this thing going when I was in Cincinnati. And so I actually like that. I think it's encouraging. You know, I talk about this all the time, but the best writing or best comments I've ever heard about turning a team around were from Bill Parcells. And he said that you have to be honest with everybody in the organization or else you're going to fail. Like, you have to be just blunt honesty. This is what we need, or else there's going to be so much passive aggressive behavior that nothing's ever going to happen. And so I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's going to be turned around in Cincinnati. I'm just saying that I very rarely get to a camp where everybody's like, yeah, this has sucked so far. And I strangely thought that to me was an encouraging sign, because I've been to a lot of camps, Jason, where things have sucked. And they've been like, yeah, you know, it's pretty good. We're doing fine. So the fact that everybody was honest about that and honest about the improvement, to me, was slightly encouraging.
So I'm just reading between the lines here. So Joe Burrow, obviously leader and blunt. Zach Taylor on the hot seat. And the Bengals drafted Joe Burrow's friend from LSU at the top of the draft. So basically, if Joe Burrow says, hey, Zach Taylor, he's not getting it done, we need to go get Joe Brady. Right. I mean, that's the guy's name who's going to come up, right? The Carolina OC who was with him at LSU.
That would seem to fit. I mean, we have to see what happens in Carolina. I mean, if Joe Brady, if that Carolina situation is a mess and they don't turn Darnold into anything, then I think that connection starts to cool a little bit. But I agree that would be one of the first names. But I think I'm not saying Brian Daboll will take it. He's going to have a ton of options, but I would look at a Brian Daboll. I mean, there's a lot of good, there is no shortage of quarterback gurus available for that job.
Why didn't Daboll get a job in the offseason? Did he even interview anywhere?
Well, I think the natural link was the Chargers job. Everybody thought he was going to get that. And then Brandon Staley was good. And kind of talked, I think people said that Brandon Staley interviewed so well that they weren't surprised that he got in there. I think that the Bills' success last year getting the AFC title game, we've seen this over the last decade. If you get far in the playoffs, it works against your assistants. I mean, there's a reason, even going back, they've changed the rules a little bit, but remember the Niners basically, when they hired Kyle Shanahan, they basically had one candidate and they said, okay, we're going to wait for you, buddy. And everybody knew he was going to get hired, but that's what you have to do. You have to take the plunge because these teams want to start building. And so it, in a weird way, might work out this year if the Bills go out earlier for Brian Daboll, or if they win the Super Bowl, there might be a team that's going to say, you know what, we're gonna wait the process out and we're gonna wait on Brian Daboll. But I think that has led to it. I think Brian Daboll is going to be an awesome head coach. Yeah. The thing is, if you can fix the quarterback anywhere, you will be an awesome head coach because you've solved the biggest problem. And so I literally don't worry about anything else unless he's a leadership disaster, which I don't think he is. In fact, I think that when I talk to guys there about Daboll, about how, you know, last year sucked so much as far as practice and meeting stuff like that, and he was getting guys on speakerphone and they're trying to simulate being in a room and a walkthrough. Yeah. Like, I kind of like that out of Daboll. And so I do think he'll be a good coach.
And sometimes, and you know this in life, like not getting a job opportunity, like not getting Houston or Detroit to just be head over heels in right. love with you is probably a good thing if Chicago comes open this offseason with Justin Fields, you know, I mean, or Joe Burrow's job mm-hmm. In Cincinnati. Like, that's way better than Detroit or Houston.
Or right? Kyler Murray, I would say. Might
down
be
on
open.
My Cardinals, huh?
I am down on your Cardinals.
Oh man, I was just talking with someone very close to the Cardinals organization. They're worried about Week One. I was just in Vegas this weekend, Kevin, and I bet on the Arizona Cardinals Week One in Tennessee. And my Cardinals friend said, "Hey Jay, have you looked at how many teams in Week One West Coast are traveling East?" And I was like, "I have not looked." And he's like, "It's like five teams. Cardinals are one of them. They're in trouble." I was like, "Ooh." So why are you down on the Cardinals?
I just haven't seen much. I mean, I was down on the Cliff hire to begin with, and then Cliff showed me something. He adjusted well. Truly, I mean, like I'm happy to admit when I'm wrong, and he showed me something early on where he was making adjustments week to week. The offense was getting better in his first season. I said, "Hey, maybe this can work. Maybe this was an okay hire, and Cliff Kingsbury really can be a quarterback guru." And I feel like everything has been stagnant since then. I think there's some talent in Arizona, but not a whole lot, not to get them. I mean, I think, look at that division, okay? If Cliff and Kyler were in the AFC South, I'd say, hell yeah, let's do this. Let's do this right now. Bet on them all you want, right? But they're going to get the crap knocked out of them because I don't know where those easy wins come from against Seattle, San Francisco, or Los Angeles. I don't think they have the roster talent. I don't know necessarily how much someone like a J.J. Watt or an A.J. Green have to give at this stage of their career, even though J.J. Watt can play a role, certainly. I don't see it. I just don't see a path. And, you know, the way I look at it, Jason, when I'm predicting the teams that I think are going to be really good, elite, I just think of how many questions they have to answer. And with the Cardinals, it's not just the roster questions. It's not just the coaching questions. It's not just – I mean, I think Kyler Murray has the chance to be a superstar, but – I think it's just also situational. Where do those easy wins come from once you get into division play?
Okay, so the counter would be they were very good last year after the, I think it was the Hail Mary win mm-hmm. against the Bills. A little lucky, obviously. And they were poised for greatness. And then down the stretch, I would argue lack of leadership in the locker room. You know, it's tough to rally behind Cliff Kingsbury, who's never won a squad anywhere, you know? So they bring in A.J. Green and J.J. Watt, and you could argue, what does A.J. Green want? I think he's 0 for the playoffs in his career, right?
Yeah.
With Dalton. But J.J. Watt is at least a veteran who's been, like, the preeminent player in the league. Could leadership have just been lacking down the stretch when they were, I think they cratered, lost like five or
yeah,
seven in the season?
I think culture is first of all, massive. And I don't want to discount that, but culture and talent need to go hand in hand. And I just don't think, I think that they are so far behind the other teams in that division, as far as that goes, that the culture may not matter, if that makes sense.
Wow. All right. So what's Seattle's culture? Russell Wilson is complaining. The defense made Jamal Adams the highest paid safety, I think, in NFL history. And, you know, he couldn't guard you
yeah.
in coverage.
I don't see
what's going on. Why everybody loves Seattle so they can put up points. So can Arizona. Why should I love Seattle?
Better coaching staff, better quarterback. The Jamal Adams thing is a little strange to me. He has put up some pretty good sack numbers, historic relative yes. to the safety position over the past couple of years. I don't think that they can be in the elite of the NFC West. I think that the Rams and the Niners are better than they are as well, but I think they're better than Arizona. It was funny. I think Russ is kind of all in. And it was funny because I was on Cowherd about I was on Cowherd about a month ago. And one of the producers was like, you know, Colin was talking. I did an interview with Russell Wilson about 6 weeks ago. And he was like, you know, Colin was talking about your piece. And I was like, that's okay, whatever. I mean, it was like a 10-minute interview. I didn't think it was anything special. And then I get on and Colin was like, I was talking about it because Russell Wilson said the word awesome 12 times. And he was so jacked for his team. And it was in total contrast to Aaron Rodgers, who showed up and said, I don't want to, you know, whatever. I don't really like this franchise. I don't want to blah, blah, blah. And I thought it was a really funny point by Colin. I thought that the way he spun that was really funny to me. That's why Colin's the GOAT. That is why Colin is the GOAT, is he can take a 10-minute interview I did with Russell Wilson and turn it into an Aaron Rodgers point. But once
it turned into a sixth grade word, awesome. My kids are saying that.
What Russell Wilson was talking about was that he's talking about Gerald Everett all of a sudden. He's talking about DK Metcalf all of a sudden. And this was mid-July or whatever it was, right after the Euro Championship, because we're talking about that game, whenever that was, in mid-July. But he was in optimism mode. And I think he will be in optimism mode until February when the season is over. And then that can we can figure that out later. But I do think that once Wilson got to camp, I think he realized. And I would say Rodgers is the same way. I mean, I think that there's, a lack of passive-aggressive behavior in Green Bay that we've seen where they're all committed to this season. And maybe it's a last dance style thing, but I think Rodgers got everything out into the open, and now it's just time for ball. And I would say the same thing in Seattle.
Okay. So, again, I like to push back and counter. So, Russell Wilson basically, Pete Carroll picked up his phone. Pete Carroll's married to Russell Wilson. Pete Carroll saw a couple girls' numbers in there in the texts and phone calls, and is like, wait, what's going on here? And Russ was like, hey, you know, I'm looking around. I'm not ready to commit. And now they got through that tough period, and they're, you know, putting a happy face on it. But I just don't see how all of a sudden, I think they got was a right guard, right? Is that all they picked up? Really? That's going to make Russell Wilson happy when he was demanding a trade three months ago, Kevin? What is that?
So I think there's a couple of things. Number one, this shows you the limits of superstar empowerment, I guess you could say, in the NFL. In the sense that these guys are under contract. You could, in theory, unless you negotiated in, and this has happened before, certainly with some of these guys, is say no franchise tag. Which is an important thing to get. But if you're under contract, there's a couple of things to know. Number one is it's not going to be like the NBA. Look at what happened when Rodgers, they leaked their Rodgers, whatever, however it leaked he was unhappy on draft night. And the Packers got two calls. If LeBron was unhappy, wouldn't the Lakers get 28 calls? Wouldn't they get 29 calls? 28. I mean, I think they get more than two.
Yes, more than two. No, wait a sec. Who were the two calls? Denver and?
The report, so I believe it was San Francisco and I think Carolina. I think.
Oh, not Denver.
I do not believe Denver made a call. I could be wrong on that.
I for some reason, I think Mark Schlereth.
Schlereth said they were like at the two-yard line.
Yes, yeah. That's why everybody got excited and I got a Denver.
But there was another report that was similar about the Panthers, too. I think that there was just a lot of chaos there. But we do know for certain that there was a call from with the Niners. We do know that.
Niners, certainly.
Yes.
So, I mean, even the idea of that gets me kind of excited about the possibility of quarterback, musical chairs in the NFL next season, right? I mean,
we said that about this offseason, too.
We say that every offseason, don't we? Like, oh, it's going to happen. No, it doesn't. We want it to be the NBA.
Every November, we're like, there is going to be unprecedented quarterback movement, and then it's Sam Darnold going to the Panthers. And Teddy Bridgewater going to Denver. But there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one is generally, broadly, the franchise tag keeps guys where they are. That's the purpose of it. You can do it for 3 years. So if in theory, if a guy, I remember talking to Aaron Rodgers about this. I think there were 2 years left on his deal when he signed his extension. But then hypothetically, they could have kept tagging him for 3 more years. So if he quote unquote forced his way into free agency in 2017 or 2018, whenever he signed his extension, that would have taken 5 years. He would not yet have done it if he had hatched that plan the year he signed his extension. He wouldn't even be close. And so, it has to be a Kirk Cousins style extenuating circumstance. And so that shows you kind of have to play it like Rodgers, where you just tell everybody, like, I'm really unhappy here, and hope that the team agrees to, as the Packers did, quote, review your situation. That's the best you can hope for right now if you're a superstar quarterback under contract.
It's frustrating. Or you have to be like Jimmy G and fail at the end of the Super Bowl and then have them draft your heir apparent, and that's how you get out.
Yeah, we said superstars, Jason.
Yes, superstar. He's not a superstar. Where's Jimmy G quarterbacking week one, 2022?
2022. So does it not make sense for it to be Houston? Only in the sense that they don't have a first-round pick. So they're the only. Right.
That was going to be my counter. Oh, jeez.
They're the only. Hold on. Let me make sure that that's true.
I think you're right.
Let's take a look here. Wow. It is, right?
Oh my gosh, that's right. The gift that keeps on giving, Bill O'Brien, right?
Wait, I actually think they do have a first round pick. Hold on. Sorry.
Because basically, they'll be certainly in the mix for the.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Let me try that again. Detroit. Let me do that again. All right. So it makes sense that it could be Houston in the sense that we know that they're going to be in the quarterback mode. But right. Everybody else is going to be in the mix for Spencer Rattler. The kid from Liberty is getting some buzz.
Oh, stop. That's a little early. Come on. I know some people are gassing him up.
Hey, I heard some Trey Lance of 2022 buzz for.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna vomit in my mouth. Hold on, wait. Pittsburgh Steelers and Jimmy G.
Could happen. I would say that it depends where they wanna be.
But I don't think they want to rebuild.
They have TJ Watt. Right. They're never comfortable taking a huge step back. Maybe. I know this is so sad. I'm so, I hope Jimmy G isn't listening. It's possible because I'm about to say something depressing. It's possible that Jimmy G this time next year is in sort of a Andy Dalton style role.
Oh, goodness.
See, that's why I didn't want
that
Jimmy G. Yes,
I'm sorry.
But it's possible.
Well, you know, he's living the dream out there in the Bay Area.
The problem is, if you are not an absolute superstar, you're always in danger of signing somewhere or getting traded somewhere and then your team drafting a replacement. I mean, for God's sake.
Jared Goff?
Yeah. I mean, I am surprised. I would not have been surprised this year if the Lions had taken a quarterback. If you were not one of 13 guys, 14 guys.
Yeah. 13, okay.
Yeah. I think if you're in your first 2 years, I think you're fine. I mean, I think someone like Kyler Murray, who's shown enough to where we know, even though he's not a top 13 guy, we know he's on the right track. But I would say that there's just a lot of, I think that Jimmy G is in the zone right now where you're in real danger of whatever team getting you is not 100% committed to you. And by the way, Jimmy G is not going to command all that much. And so that's a definition of taking a flyer.
But I mean, we've seen teams take that quarterback, like what was it? Case Keenum with the Vikings. Didn't they go to the NFC title game a couple years back? I mean, the New York Giants, I don't know if you're with me. I think Danny Dimes is kind of a bad quarterback, but the shell around him is quite good. You know, if you exclude the coaching, And now you're like, is Jimmy G maybe the answer for the Giants next year? So, I mean, I think he's in a little better shape than Jared Goff. I do feel bad for Goff, though. I mean, that guy was in the Super Bowl with McVay, and he's in Detroit now.
Yeah.
And it's looking extremely bleak for Jared Goff.
I would also say, by the way, the Keenum thing was just an accident because Sam Bradford got hurt. And so you've seen those situations play out, but it's been extenuating circumstances. I think that it's going to be real bad. I was in Detroit a couple weeks ago. I actually like Dan Campbell for that team.
Oh,
I don't think that they're going to win a lot of games in 2021, but I think he knows what motivates the rank and file NFL player. And I don't think that he's going to work any miracles in the short term. But I think if you're trying to build a culture and you're trying to just get guys on the right track and rowing in the same direction, I think Campbell's your guy. I just think that Jared Goff is kind of going to be collateral damage when you think about the lack of talent on the roster. I just don't know what he does. And then once he's not commanding some huge contract, I think he's worse than the Garoppolo zone. I think he's squarely in the Andy Dalton zone.
You could actually make the case that the Lions probably will pull him for the final 6 weeks so they get the number one pick and they trot out David Blau over the backup.
Jason, let me stop you right there. I don't even think Goff starting precludes them from getting the number one overall pick.
Oh, God. I'm
serious.
Extremely bleak. How about this? They go from a rocket scientist, right? That's what Matt Patricia was, to Dan Campbell, who's like basically your eighth grade PE teacher. Is that harsh?
It is harsh. I would also say that Matt Patricia did not act like a rocket scientist.
He did not.
That's one thing.
All right, let's go with two teams to wrap up. Just two random teams. I need whether you love or hate them for this season. And I'm starting with the Las Vegas Raiders, who have problems once again, financial issues, yeah, depending on what you read. I personally don't like what Gruden's doing, but they seem like they could be plucky offensively, depending on if Carr's in like your top 13. But Raiders, what do you think?
So I thought they had some strange offensive line moves this offseason. I like their skill guys, and I like Gruden's ability to call plays. Okay, like we saw the funny report of Hunter Renfrow beating Jalen Ramsey in practice. Like, I love that.
That wasn't funny. That was amazing. That was incredible. Like,
I think there's some talent there. I don't think that they, kind of like the Cardinals problem, right? Even if they're plucky this year, they're not going to be as good as the Chargers or the Chiefs. They're going to get the crap knocked out of them by those two teams. So I don't hate them, but I certainly don't love them. I just think it's going to be another blah year. I think it's going to be John Gruden doing a lot of complaining, and I just don't know what the point of that franchise is right now.
All right. The other one is the team that probably my second favorite team this year after the Jets, who we will close out with here. Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm all in on Urban in year one. But then again, I thought Tebow would make the team. Trevor Lawrence, rookie of the year, all that stuff. Jacksonville, can they sneak into the playoffs and be decent?
They can't sneak into the playoffs, but they can be decent this year. So
they cannot sneak into the playoffs.
They cannot. So for me, Jacksonville, first of all, I'm high on Urban too. I think we're in the same boat. And I think that a lot of times people misunderstand why college coaches don't work in the NFL. Like, Lou Holtz famously quit the Jets after a handful of weeks and just said, literally said, God did not put Lou Holtz on this earth to be an NFL coach, right? Like, some of these guys get there and they're just like, I hate this. Nick Saban famously, once he realized he couldn't get a quarterback, once he realized he couldn't recruit a bunch of five stars, he was just like, I'm out of here. He said that in the past. And I think that Urban, he will have the plays and he'll have the methodology and all that stuff. I mean, it reminds me, Chip Kelly's problem was not the plays. The plays worked. You remember that? It was fire for a handful of weeks. The problem was he just couldn't make adjustments. That happened late in his Philadelphia tenure, and it happened the entire time he was in San Francisco. So Urban can learn from those mistakes and be a productive NFL coach. I just think it's going to take a while because I just think they're building up that roster and it's going to take a little bit. I think they can win games. I look at it when I'm thinking about a team, and I'll talk about this with the Jets. When I'm looking at a team that I think is going to be bad, wants to show me something, I just expect them to win games they shouldn't, right? Like, like beat some teams where I'm like, okay, I see you, Jaguars. And that's what I expect from them this year.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
In the NBA, everybody seems to have thought, like, oh, the Phoenix Suns just went to the finals. They hadn't made the playoffs in forever. And the Hawks got to the conference finals. So, like, everybody in the NBA is, like, trying to win this year. But in the NFL, like, I think the Jets are realists, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, we don't have anything. Like, we've got to start from ground zero. We're not winning a ton of games. Let's do this, that, and the other. And I am optimistic, but, I mean, Kevin, what a depressing weekend this had to be. I haven't even looked to see what the McDermott verdict is. Is it bad?
I have not. Let me look here.
Okay. He was carted off, the offensive lineman, projected as a starter 2 days after Carl Lawson was done for the season.
So I cannot find anything here. Hold on. But the Lawson thing is awful because the Lawson signing was exactly the kind of move that you want to make. The Bengals decided for some reason to roll with Trey Hendrickson over Lawson. They let Lawson go.
Idiotic.
And then I thought that was good business, and then this happens. There were reports this morning, I don't know if you saw them, that the Jets are probably in business for a pass rusher just to try to get something, be a trade or whatever. But they're not going to get a Carl Lawson. That's for damn sure. No. And it's funny to me how quickly it flipped. I was on a podcast a couple of weeks ago, Jason. I said I thought Zach Wilson was the second best quarterback in the draft. He was taken second overall.
Let's go.
And people, not a lot, but like five people were like, you're the biggest dumbass on the planet. You think he was second? You think he's better than Trey Lance? It's like, the Jets thought he was the second best quarterback 3 months, five months ago. Like, we're going to be fine. Conventional wisdom just flips so often and people start to, people start to label him a bust after a couple of practices. It has not been good so far. But I also think first of all, bad training camp practices can be good. You know, I've been to Green Bay is a good example, and I'm not comparing the two. But there have been some practices where I've looked at it and said, this is awful. And I'll talk to a coach later and they're like, well, we were just trying to see if we could do X, Y, and Z. Like, I give you an example, Aaron Rodgers threw a bunch of practice training camp interceptions a few years ago. One of the coaches said to me, really Aaron's good on accuracy. He doesn't need to prove to himself or to the fans he's good. He can throw an accurate NFL pass. What he's doing is he doesn't know if he can trust, the number four receiver. And he's just throwing it up there to see kind of what's possible there. And I'm not saying that's the case with Wilson. All I'm saying is the practice is for testing your limits. Mahomes does this all the time. And if it's a guy like Wilson, who his whole thing is throwing off platform, throwing off schedule, doing lots of weird stuff, it might take him a while to become a fully formed NFL player and to rein that in, for lack of a better term. I mean, Mahomes was ready. Everybody says Mahomes is ready to be a starter kind of midway through his rookie year, but we don't know what that would have looked like if he had actually started week one of his rookie year. We don't want to know if everybody was watching every single rep of his on August 3rd, his rookie year, what that would have looked like. So I'm not saying Wilson is going to be a superstar. I'm not saying he's going to be good this year. All I'm saying is that for young quarterbacks in particular, the lack of patience to me is really quite stunning. And I understand why. And I understand sort of the overemphasis and overanalyzing of everything that we do now. But I just, this isn't Christian Hackenberg here. Okay. Like, let's give it some time.
Yes. I will admit, I was not only excited for Hackenberg, but Darnold as well.
I was not excited. I was not excited for Hackenberg. I saw that one coming a mile away, by the way. It looks like I was trying to get a injury report and I couldn't. I don't have one. Sorry.
You didn't reference Zach Wilson's awesome nickname, the Mormon Mahomes.
I've not heard that.
If you start saying that, it's amazing. You need to say that, the Mormon Mahomes. It'll stick. I don't know who gets credit for it. It might be Daniel Jeremiah on this podcast. But I think he's the one who said it. And it's an incredible nickname. And obviously, he's not Patrick Mahomes. We know that. But it's exciting for my Jets. Hold on. You said something. You think he's the second best quarterback in this draft. I want to back up. Coming into last season, how would you have ranked the three quarterbacks, Burrow, Tua, and Herbert? And then how do you rank them now, given what you've seen? I know sample size.
Oof. Okay. So Burrow, Tua, Herbert. I had him Burrow, Tua, Herbert. This time last year, the only person who really, I remember this, Mike Tannenbaum came on my podcast right before the draft last year. And I'm doing Burrow Tua just like we all were on every podcast. Right. He was going, you're really overlooking Herbert. And he was the one guy who stopped me and was like, I think this is being not in a negative way, but he was like, the framing of this conversation is disrespectful to how good Justin Herbert is. And I remember thinking about that. And as that happened last year, I said, damn, Mike Tannenbaum, that he knows what he's talking about. We're gonna let that hang there.
Former Jets GM. I'm not gonna say anything.
We're gonna let that hang there for a little bit. All right. So
hey, listen, I think he went to two AFC title games with Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez. So he did a pretty damn good job building that roster. So that was the last time a Jets fan was fun. But it's interesting. I remember Dan Orlovsky and I went at it on Twitter, and I like Dan, good guy, over Herbert versus Tua, and he was so anti-Herbert.
A lot of people
anti-Herbert.
So,
but really, let me ask, is it because there was like the tank for Tua, everybody thought he was amazing, Alabama, and Joe Burrow was this shiny new object that came out of nowhere and was putting up astronomical numbers that we'd never seen before in college football? Like, is it just like Herbert was like the other guy who had, I think, 2.5 years as a starter, or maybe three, and it was just like, Oregon.
Yeah, I'm not comparing the two, but I'm going to say that Herbert and Mahomes had opposite problems. The reason that a lot of scouts missed on Mahomes was because he was trying to do too much, because they were always in these 70 to 63 shootouts. And he was trying to put the team on his back and he was making mistakes because of it. Okay. And Herbert was the opposite, where he was doing too little. and he wasn't able to show what he was capable of. And I think that from what I heard, including with Daniel Jeremiah, we talked about this last fall, from what I heard, I think that there was just not a lot on tape of him doing the things that he was doing in Los Angeles. Remember, he was thrown into the fire there after the horrible Tyrod yes. Taylor thing. A lot of this was an accident. A lot of this was, they knew that Herbert was talented, but they didn't know he was this good or else he would have been started.
No, I don't think anybody did.
And so, a small sample size, he played really well against pressure, which you always have to watch because pressure comes and goes. Playing well against pressure can come and go. But I also just think that there just wasn't a huge data set or a tape set that showed that Herbert was going to be able to do this. And so I don't necessarily blame people. I still think Burrow can be a superstar. And I think that we've moved off of him so quickly because he plays in Cincinnati. You know, like I think if Burrow played for the Jets or the Giants or the Rams, we'd be going, okay, year two, he's back, baby. And I think that he was awesome. I mean, Jason, within 20 yards last year, this is according to Pro Football Focus, within 20 yards of the line of scrimmage last year, Burrow, when he was kept clean, had the best accuracy rating in the history of any rookie since they started tracking it 15 years ago. He was fifth in the NFL in that metric. Okay. And that's pretty stable year to year is clean pockets. So he can make the throws. And if he develops this year and kind of gets past his early training camp quirks, whatever you want to call it, he's going to make the throws. For me, it's about infrastructure. For me, it's about offensive line. But I still think Joe Burrow really does have superstar potential. It's just that he's facing a lot.
Yeah. I don't know that people are off him. I said, I think on Cowherd's show that the worst quarterback in that division is Ben Roethlisberger going into the season. And people are like, oh, come on, Joe Burrow's got to be.
I agree
I'm like,
with that, no.
Like, Joe Burrow, come on, that guy's so good. Hey, listen, he won me some money last season and took some money out of my pocket because I didn't think he could cover a bunch of those games. He's never out of a game. Sure. I'm with you. This preseason stuff, I'm not flustered whatsoever. No. But I want to go back to something else you said, and I'm sorry to keep you a little
longer. No, it's okay.
But, you know, Herbert is essentially the poster child for we don't really know anything about quarterbacks right. in the league. I mean, Patrick Mahomes was that guy, but Herbert, like, he played in a weird offense, and now he's in a different offense, and he's doing other stuff. It's like, why? Zach Wilson was incredible last year at BYU. I don't know what he's going to be like in LaFleur's offense. Maybe he's amazing. Like, literally, he could be amazing.
Yes. Okay. So okay,
maybe that's a bit strong. Maybe amazing is a bit strong. Sorry.
But I think you can make that case with any quarterback until we've seen them play. You can.
No. Tua will not be amazing. Right. Kevin.
We've seen it. I'm saying if you haven't seen the quarterback play, you can just say, hey, maybe if he gets in the right offense, it'd be great.
Yeah. By the way, on Tua, I'm not bashing him, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I don't recall a rookie coming in and getting pulled twice because he didn't give his team as good of a chance to win.
As Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Like Tua last year. And now they got, I think, dual offensive coordinators in Miami. The third year for Flores, third mm-hmm. different offensive coordinator. Like, something's not right there. I know they got Fuller and they drafted Waddle, but I'm just not seeing it with Miami this year. I don't know.
Woof. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it in a positive trajectory. I'm seeing them as a fringe playoff team, same as they were last year. Okay. But unless the quarterback makes a huge stride, I'm not seeing massive AFC East contention, which I think, frankly, I know that sounds Pollyanna-ish for me to say that I think that they can make the playoffs. But I think that we all thought that by year three, when we saw what they were doing in year two, that they would be contending for the division this year. I think they're not quite there. But to answer your question, you know, like Jordan Love is a good example of someone where I think someone like Jordan Love is going to benefit from just sitting on a bench in the best offense in football. I'm not saying Matt LaFleur's offense is the best offense in football. I'm saying that system is the best system in football. And he's just going to learn from it. And that system creates easy throws. It creates open guys. And when he's ready, I think he's going to be at least okay. And so among the He's not going to be. He's not going to be Aaron Rodgers. No one's going to be Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, he's not. Jordan Love will not be. Not Aaron be. Rodgers.
Yeah, there's your buzzy. There's your buzzy. Oh, there's your buzzy headline. but no, with the Dolphins, I think that I'm with you. Tua is number three among those quarterbacks in his draft class, and I don't know, barring one of those guys really crashing down to earth, I don't know how often that can change. Because what's interesting to me is you look at 2016, which I think a lot about the quarterbacks in that year, because you have Wentz, Goff, and Prescott, obviously. And those guys flipped around so much where if you could, every 5 weeks you could press time out and say, okay, let's rank these guys. Wentz was an MVP candidate at one point. Goff was, made a Super Bowl, and Prescott is probably long-term if he's healthy, going to be the best of those guys, obviously. When you consider those two teams, that took Goff and Wentz came up on them. But, when I think about 2020, Burrow, Herbert, and Tua, I think it might be Herbert, Burrow, and Tua for at least a couple of years now. I don't think that those guys are going to flip-flop.
I'm with you. All right. He is Kevin Clark from The Ringer. It is fantasy football season, so I'm curious. Do you play, and what is your team name?
I don't play.
What?
I play occasionally when The Ringer launched. Some of the TV writers on staff had a league. I don't want to view it, and I don't want to view the game of football in a different way, if that makes sense. I like to engage with football. Like, you know, I've played tons of Madden in my day. I don't gamble on football either. Pro football, I gamble on college football. It's just for me, I want to view it as dispassionately as possible. And I joke around about this all the time, but you know, I gamble on golf more than anything. Gamble on combat sports, whatever. But there will be times where, like, Xander Schauffele will miss a birdie putt, and I will be more mad at Xander Schauffele than any human being on the planet, right? I would just, like, if I could, I would scream at Xander Schauffele, right? And sometimes when I think, if I gambled on football and, like, Bobby Wagner dropped an interception, and then the next week I'm talking to Bobby Wagner, and I'm just like, what the hell was that, Wagner? You know what I'm saying? Like, that is what I'm trying to avoid. And that is why I've never placed a bet on football. And as long as my job remains the same, I will never place a bet on football.
All right. That's a reasonable answer. And listen, I went to Vegas. I said that earlier. I bet Baker Mayfield long shot to win the MVP. Only because the schedule is super weak. I think that offense rolls people in year two. I think they could win 11, 12 games. Ravens kind of worry me going into the season with the injuries, and now I'm rambling. But there is a world for me where the Browns are like the number two seed in the AFC, and Baker gets MVP love.
I agree.
I'm just putting that out there, Kevin. You can
MVP, take a dump MVP buzz and best elite quarterbacks can be two different things.
Yes. All right, that's it. Yeah. Kevin Clark, The Ringer. Follow him, read his stuff. He's great. All right, thanks, Kev.
Thanks, Jason.